Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
You're the best! We're the beautiful! We're the only!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, how are you today?
Slipping and sliming, my man. How you doing?
Yeah, doing great. Looking forward to talking some Home Alone and diving into Macaulay Culkin and all this whole cast of awesome cast of Home Alone. We get to talk some more John Hughes, too. How cool is that?
Always happy to bring the Hughes man back.
There you go.
And I know we this is number three?
This is three. Uncle Buck, Planes, Trains, and then Home Alone. Cool. And then I know we have a special guest on the line. So, JD, why don't you introduce our guest?
Yeah, so joining us tonight, we've got George. He's a buddy of mine that I've known since high school. Joined in college together. He's was a part of a couple of our failed movie projects. Great guy, great mind, very intelligent, aspiring screenwriter, just the same. So he's going to bring a lot of intelligence and a lot of really pointing out some of the finer points of this movie that we're about to review. So George, very happy to have you on the show with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Happy to be here. I'm glad you brought me in on like Home Alone and not some like random black movie, like Blackula or something like that.
Well, I did want to bring you on for Black Knight, but yeah, glad to have you for Home Alone instead.
Nice. And we want to thank you guys for hitting the download button on today's podcast. Remember, you can subscribe to the show, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, YouTube, and that'll make sure that you never miss an episode. It's also the best way to help support the show. And then if you're looking for some Christmas present ideas, check out fivefingertees.com. Get your hand on some cool graphic t-shirts and hoodies. And support the show while you're at it. Just use the promo code 5OFF at the checkout and save yourself a little bit of money. 5OFF. Now, before we jump into Home Alone, JD, let's go back to last week. We talked about Scrooge. What was your feedback on our Scrooged episode?
Dude, lots of love for Scrooge. Apparently, people definitely were digging what we had to say and what we were coming with. It's a movie that a lot of people are familiar with, but they haven't necessarily watched it. Or at least gone into the depth that we did. And, you know, thank you guys for tuning in, listening in, and giving your feedback. And for voting for it, because it was a poll winner.
And also, shout out to Ben from the Angry Dad podcast for joining us on the episode. And remember, check out his show. It's on all platforms. And as he would say, check out that motherfucking podcast. He's a fun guest. That was a high-energy dude right there. Let's jump into some intro to Home Alone. This is a 1990 American Christmas comedy film written and produced by John Hughes, directed by Christopher Columbus. The film stars Macaulay Culkin as Kevin McAllister, a boy who's mistakenly left behind when his family flies to Paris for their Christmas vacation. Kevin initially relishes being home alone, but soon has to contend with two burglars. Culkin was nominated for a Golden Globe Award for Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy. After its release, Home Alone became the highest-grossing live-action comedy film of all time until the record was broken by Hangover Part 2, 2011. JD, does that piss you off a little bit? Hangover 2, not a very good film.
No, it's really not a good movie. And I, for what it's worth, didn't like the first Hangover.
I liked it at the time, but it does not hold up well.
When was the last time you saw it?
A couple of years ago.
And a couple of years ago, it didn't hold up well.
No. Like, I mean, within 7 years, I was like, oh, geez. These jokes they're flat now. It's definitely the highest grossing movie of all time with inflation. So Home Alone is obviously a huge franchise. It spawned a four sequels. Some of them I haven't even seen. But the one that includes the actual cast from the originals, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, all the other ones have different cast, and some of them are just like direct-to-TV or direct-to-DVD movies. Shooting took place in Winnetka, Illinois. Am I saying that right, Illinois guy?
Yes, you are saying that.
Okay.
Right. There it is.
Yep, Winnetka, and then Wilmette. That's part of it, too. And then parts of Evanston. They filmed February 14th, 1990, wrapped May 16th, making it a three-month shooting schedule. JD, I know we talked a little bit about this on previous episodes, but let's talk a little bit here about John Hughes and just what you think about this script in kind of correlation with the stuff that he had previous to this.
So I love the comparisons that get to be made between this and Uncle Buck. And if I'm not mistaken, Macaulay Culkin's character in Home Alone is based off of him in Uncle Buck, correct?
It is, yeah. He actually recommended that Columbus hire him based off of Uncle Buck.
So with that being said, like, I love the concept that they established with Macaulay Culkin in Uncle Buck, with just the kid being alone, poking his head through, you know, the mail slots. And in 1990, this was something that was a very wholesome concept. It was kind of a home run for a contained comedy, Christmas thriller, whatever you want to call it. And it was unique for many ways. And I think that they established their characters and their narrative very well. And the stakes are quite high, and the macaroni and cheese is delicious.
Is it, though? I don't know. I don't think microwaved mac and cheese is that great.
How do you make your mac and cheese, Kyle?
Boil it, and then I make it on the stovetop.
With milk or with water?
Milk. Come on.
Oh, you can afford milk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you probably George. Did.
See, we got to talk, and now you're talking my realm now. See, when I grew up, my mom always baked our macaroni and cheese. And I actually had never had stovetop mac and cheese until I was significantly older.
Okay, this is interesting. Now we're going on the right path here. How big of a difference is it baked compared to stovetop?
The consistency is a lot better because you get that crustiness on top with the cheese. So we never had breadcrumbs on our mac and cheese. And every time I go out to restaurants, I always notice that. But yep. We always did the cheese kind of, when you bake it and you put that egg in there, it really takes it to that next level and it's really creamy. And then the top is like kind of crusty and you get those edges. It's like the edge of a cake and it's like, oh, it's next level delicious.
Mm. All right. I'm getting really hungry here. What would you have with the mac and cheese? Now, was that just dinner or was there like another dish? Is that a side dish?
Oh, that was definitely a side
dish. Okay.
You would do the mac and cheese, and I'm going to go real stereotypical here. We would have fried chicken and like, you know, mashed potatoes and different things like that. I don't really feel like that's stereotypical necessarily.
No.
Because I think everybody loves fried chicken and mac and cheese.
If you don't like fried chicken, fuck you. That's ridiculous. Come on.
That's what I always say.
Yeah.
Hey, but even Donald Trump loves fried chicken, my friends.
Yeah.
But we did have the Donnie. Extra sweet Kool-Aid always.
There you go. So we're going to be back on the other side. We'll take a quick break, and we're going to have the full review here.
Wait a minute, what are you doing, Don?
I need fuel.
Hey, this is Phantom Dark Dave, and I'm the host of Dave's Pop Culture Podcast. Right now, you're listening to the Back in Time Podcast, which features Kyle and JD, who have both been on my podcast. So if you're listening here, you need to listen to them there, and come check me out. Got everything from horror, science fiction, comic books and cartoons, and some outstanding comedy if you just like shooting the breeze. You can find me over on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and Google Play.
All right, so we're back from the break, ready to jump into the full review here for Home Alone. So we begin at the McAllister house, and things are a little crazy inside as they're getting ready for dinner. and trying to pack for their trip at the same time. Inside the house, we see a police officer. And of course, we know this is going to be Harry, but we don't know his name yet. We cut upstairs where Kevin is upset because Uncle Frank won't let him watch a movie. Kate, his mom, says, "Listen, if Uncle Frank says no, it must be really bad." Back downstairs, Harry is asking each kid that passes him, "Are your parents here? No. Your parents here? No. What is this, some sort of fancy orphanage?" Next, Kevin's talking to two of his cousins, and one tells him, "What do you want me to tell the dope? He was whining about his suitcase. I'm supposed to shake his hand and tell him congratulations, you're an idiot?" Another cousin says, "You're what the French call les incompétents. P.S. You have to sleep on the height of bed with Fuller, and if he has too much to drink, he's going to wet the bed." JD, what do you think of this opening scene and just a lot of one-liners?
My favorite part is that they're making fun of Kevin, right? Because Fuller is going to wet the bed. They're not making fun of Fuller for wetting the bed. It's Kevin. You suck because somebody else is going to piss on you. How is that fair?
Right.
That's so not fair to Kevin.
Upstairs, we meet Buzz. JD, how great is the character of Buzz, played by Devin Rattray?
Oh, he's fantastic. And he reprises almost a shot for shot of himself in Blue Rune, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, is that real? I didn't know that.
No, it's not the shot for shot, but he's in Blue Rune.
That's awesome. It's a playoff of this character?
Well, I could only assume so. I'm being silly.
Oh, God damn it. You got me all excited.
Buzz has got to be one of my favorite characters in the whole movie. As far as he really just nails like that older kind of jerk older brother who's just like, get out of here, you fucking kid. And it's like he gives that same vibe like every time he sees him, even when he compliments him toward the end of the movie. It still kind of comes off as insulting at the same time.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. So, yeah, Kevin walks into Buzz's room next, and he's like, "Hey, Buzz." And he turns around, he's like, "Don't you know how to knock, phlegmwad?" Kevin asks if he can sleep in Buzz's room. He's like, "I wouldn't let you sleep in my room if you were growing on my ass." Buzz tells Kevin and his cousin to come check out old man Marley. He says he's the South Bend Shovel Slayer. His cousin asks why they haven't arrested him yet, and Buzz is like, "Oh, he walks up and down the streets here and can't find the bodies. To be honest, it's in the garbage can. That's where he keeps all his bodies. It's full of salt. He shovels it on the sidewalk." The old man looks up at the window, and all three of them take cover. In the next scene here, the pizza man arrives. Harry lets him in. The delivery guy says, "So you're just around for the holidays?" And Harry's like, "Yeah, I guess you could say that." Peter goes on to basically tell him his entire alarm system, everything they have in place. And then we cut to the kitchen here, and Kevin's looking for his cheese pizza. And of course, Buzz is here stuffing his face. He says, "Oh yeah, you want a piece? Someone's going to have to barf it up because it's all gone." We hear somebody say, "Fuller, go easy on the Pepsi." Kevin turns and looks at him. Fuller just smiles and raises his eyebrows. And then Buzz starts to barf here. And Kevin runs, instead of grabbing a plate like he's asked, and just charges him and double punches him in the gut. And then let's listen to our first clip here. Is Kevin's in some trouble here.
"Are you all right? What is the matter with you?
He started it. He ate my pizza on purpose. He knows I had sausage and olives and
look onions. What you did, you little jerk.
Kevin, get upstairs right now."
"Why?"
"Kevin, you're such a disease."
"Shut up."
"Kevin, upstairs."
"Say goodnight, Kevin."
"Goodnight, Kevin."
"Now it's for brothers such like we don't know.
Why do I get treated like skunk?"
"Oh, I'm sorry. This house is just crazy. We've got all these extra kids running around. My brother-in-law drove in from Ohio today. It's just nuts."
"How come you didn't bring more cheese pizzas?"
"Nice tip. Thanks a lot."
"Thanks.
Having a reunion or something?"
"Oh, no, my husband's brother transferred to Paris last summer and both of his kids are still going to school here, and I guess he missed the whole family. He's giving us all this trip to Paris for the holidays so we can be together."
"You're taking a trip to Paris?
Yes, we hope to leave tomorrow morning.
Excellent.
If you'll excuse me, this one's a little out of sorts. I'll be right back.
Don't worry about me. I spoke to your husband already. And don't worry about your home. It's in good hands.
JD, from a writing standpoint, what do you like about this opening scene here with Harry and the family?
This is a great part that sort of establishes who the characters are and what they want. And we get to see the McAllisters in their natural habitat. We get to see Joe Pesci, and we get to see a lot of show versus tell without too much exposition. Like, we learn who the characters are in a very organic way, which is a very powerful setup for the story.
So we cut to Kevin, who's being told he has to go up to the third floor, and he tells his mom he doesn't want to sleep up there with Fuller. You know about him. He wets the bed. And then he goes on to say that everyone in the family hates him, and his mom says maybe you should ask Santa for a new family. And he's like, I don't want any family. Families suck. And he tells his mom that he doesn't want to see her or anybody else in the family for the rest of his life, and he hopes he never sees any of you jerks again. He heads up the bed, and when he lays down, we hear a voice in his head say, I wish they would all just disappear. Later that night, we see outside, the wind is really blowing, a tree branch breaks, and takes down the entire power for the neighborhood, shutting off the alarm next to the bed. So we wake up the next morning to a knock at the door. Kate reaches over to check the alarm, and then stands up and yells, Peter, we slept in! Warren, what'd you think about this scene?
I love the scene. I love how it almost came off as magic, because they made the sound after he said what he said about his family. You hear this magical kind of sound that they make, and then you hear it, and then they boom, then they drop it, and that's it was a very clever way of kind of putting them in a situation and causing more conflict by shutting off that power. And that whole power being shut off is a big catalyst throughout the whole movie as far as when they try to communicate with them and everything. It was a very clever way of kind of putting that in there.
Yeah, and I believe John Williams is the one that scored this movie. Obviously, one of the best to ever do it, so that's a great point. Now, outside, the neighborhood kid is pestering the guy that's driving the van, and then he's going through all the bags in the car, and then one of the cousins, Heather, starts a head count, and she's counting everybody, one, two, three. She gets to the kid and counts him in place of Kevin, and then they all get into the van, and then Kate comes in. She's like, Heather, you got a count? She's like, yep, 10 kids, including me, partridge and a pear tree. And then next thing you know, we're off to the airport. And they have to sprint through the entire airport at O'Hare. They load into the plane. They're there just in time. They're told to go in, grab a seat quickly. Peter says, we made it. Kate says, yeah, I just hope we didn't forget anything. We cut back to the house where we see Kevin coming out from the third floor. He's got bedhead. And then we cut right back to an airport that's taking off. He goes downstairs, turns on the TV, and just sits in the kitchen. He's actually watching Miracle on 34th Street, which 5 years later, John Hughes would help remake into a modern day version. And then Kevin yells for his mom. JD, what do you think of this scene?
It's a very innocent scene. Like, I love the way that he wakes up. He's got the bed head. He just sort of stumbles around. He puts on the TV. He's a kid at the end of the day, whether we want to believe the comparison that he is the Jigsaw killer from Saw or not.
Yeah.
I just feel so bad for him he knows that the family is going on vacation and he stumbles down the stairs and, Mom, where are you? Like, you idiot. Obviously, they left you behind.
That's a good point. This is one of my, for whatever reason, Frank is one of my favorite characters from this movie. The uncle. What do you think of him here in the airplane when he's like, put crystal silver, put it in your purse. And then they come by and he's like, hey, here, fill it up. Thank you.
See, when I was a kid, like, I despised Uncle Frank. But as I rewatched this as an adult, it's like, okay, I can relate to Uncle Frank.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of myself in Uncle Frank as far as my parenting techniques go. Because sometimes kids are little jerks, and you just want to yell it out, like, hey, watch it, you little jerk. It's something like we used to say at my house. After we all seen this movie, we would all say that to each other. Look what you did, you little jerk.
I love that line. Yeah, and he gets even more lines in the sequel. I love the scene where he's singing in the shower, and he's like, cut to bed. He's like, get out of here, you nosy little pervert. It's just, there's so many great Frank lines. But anyway, we cut back to Kate and Peter, and they're talking. They're just sitting in first class. They kind of feel bad they're not with the kids, or at least she does. And Peter's like, listen, they're having the time of their lives back there. Don't worry about them. Back at the house, Kevin is looking all over for the family. He goes downstairs where he sees the furnace, and the furnace kind of comes to life and starts like chomping, sends him running up the stairs. He runs outside, and he sees the garage is still open. Both cars are still there. And he sits down and kind of has a couple things pop up in his head. Let's listen to another clip.
I made my family disappear.
Kevin, you completely helped us.
No, Kevin, you're what the French call les incompétents.
Kevin, I'm going to feed you to my tarantula.
Kevin, you are such a disease.
There are 15 people in this house, and you're the only one who has to make trouble.
Look what you did, you little jerk.
I made my family disappear.
Yeah! Warren, what did you think of this scene?
Oh, I love that scene. It was just really smart. I love, because it puts you in the mind of a small kid. You know, you wish for something so hard. And sometimes when you are like a black sheep, like in your family, it's like you just want them to just go away. And to think like you could close your eyes and wish it and it would happen. And it actually ties in if the whole Miracle on Christmas theme.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. Now, we've got a montage of Kevin just running around the house. He's celebrating because he's made his family disappear. He's going through Buzz's Foot Locker. This cracked me up. He grabs the Playboy magazine. He's looking and he goes, no clothes on anybody. Weird. And then he yells, Buzz, I'm going through all your stuff. You better come out and pound me. And he grabs a photo frame and he goes, Buzz's girlfriend. Woof. Interesting fact. That is not, in fact, a girl. That's just a chubby boy that they dressed up as a girl so that the girl wouldn't feel bad. Kevin grabs Buzz's BB gun next and starts shooting down different figurines. And then he's made himself a giant hot fudge sundae, and he's watching the scary movie that Uncle Frank wouldn't let him watch. Let's listen to this clip here.
Is it?
It's me, Snakes. I got the stuff.
Leave it on that doorstep and get the hell out of here.
All right, Johnny. But what about my money?
What money?
AC said you had some dough for me.
Bet it bet. How much do I owe you?
AC said 10%.
Too bad AC ain't in charge no more.
What do you mean?
Guys, I'm eating junk and watching rubbish. Yeah. You better come out and stop me.
He'll call you when he gets out. Hey, I tell you what I'm going to give you, Snakes. I'm going to give you to the count of 10 to get your ugly, yellow, no good keister off my property before I pump your guts full of lead.
All right, Johnny, I'm sorry. I'm going.
One. 2, 10. Keep the change, you filthy animal.
JD, what'd you think of this scene?
Again, I like to focus on the innocence that Macaulay Culkin brings to Kevin McAllister here. Because we think that he's adult enough, we think he's old enough, he can have a pizza, he can watch a movie, he can have his fudge sundae, he can have his cake and eat it too, but in reality, he can't. Like, he is not nearly as adult and refined as he hopes that he is. And he tries to watch this film, and his honest to goodness response is, "Mom!" He cries for mom like a little bitch.
You just said how innocent he was, and called him a bitch.
Well, yeah, innocent people are bitches.
We cut back to the plane where Kate just can't put her finger on what they are forgetting. And she sits back in her chair and then she yells out, "Kevin!" We cut back to the house where Kevin is sledding from the top of the stairs to the outside of the house. And then we cut back to Kate, who's just being comforted by the family. And they're like, "It's okay. We'll, as soon as we get off the plane, we'll figure it out." And then Frank speaks up and he's like, "Don't feel bad. You know, I forgot my glasses." Warren, forgetting your kid at home and forgetting your glasses, totally the same thing, right?
You know what? This is another excellent line by Uncle Frank, and it really speaks to his character. And I love that line. When he said it and I watched it as a kid, nothing. I just watched it as an adult. I laughed out loud. I just thought it was just really funny comparing it. And how they all just kind of turn to look at him like, "Come on, Frank."
Yes. So we meet our burglars next, Marv and Harry. Harry, played by the great Joe Pesci. JD, what are your thoughts on Joe Pesci here as Harry?
There was one night a few years ago, I was laying in bed, and I heard somebody out my window. And I swear to goodness, it was Joe Pesci. He was like, "Get out of here, squirt. Get over here. Get out of here. Yeah, I'm gonna pump you full of lead. Yeah, get out of here. Get over here." So obviously I love Joe Pesci because I think I audibly met him.
Okay. And then we have Marv, played by Daniel Stern. JD, what's your favorite Daniel Stern movie and why is it Bushwhacked?
It's actually Rookie of the Year.
I love that one.
I know you do. But props for bringing up Bushwhacked.
Hot ice! Interesting fact, though, Bushwhacked, which is a 20th century Fox film, just like Home Alone, was originally intended to be a spinoff for Marv, and they decided to change the story and make him Max Grabowski instead of Marv. JD, Bushwhacked was a huge flop. In fact, it ruined his entire deal because he had a multi-deal with 20th Century Film. Never got to make another movie with them because of how bad Bushwhacked was. Do you think that would be different if he would have been Marv?
No, Bushwhacked was not a good movie.
What you're saying is Bushwhack was whack.
What I'm trying to say to you is Trial and Error with Kramer was a good movie.
So we're going to meet the characters here, and we're going to catch them talking in the van. Let's take a listen.
Told me from their own mouths. It's almost too easy.
Check it out. All the houses with nobody home have automatic timers on their lights. But I got it all figured out. Watch this. Number 664 will be going on right about now. Wait. Number 672, right now. Wait. 671, now. And that's the one, Marvin. That's the silver tuna.
Oh, it's very G.
Very G, huh? It's loaded. It's got lots of top flight goods. Stereos, VCRs.
Toys?
Probably looking at some very fine jewelry. Possible cash hoard. Odd marketable securities. Who knows? It's a gem. Maybe a crowbar. Up.
Warren, what'd you think about this scene here and meeting our burglars for the first time?
I thought it was fantastic. I really loved Daniel Stern in this movie. And watching it just kind of reminded me of how he kind of was a big part of my personal childhood, because he was in a bunch of movies that I loved as a kid, including City Slickers, which I loved, and one of the only like VHS movies we owned was Celtic Pride for some reason.
Love that movie.
And we used to watch that all the time. But this scene is just it's good because it shows that they have some intelligence. Even though they kind of play them as goofballs, it still shows that they are intelligent and they are well planned.
Definitely. So we cut to Kevin, who is asleep on the couch. He's watching A Grinch Stole Christmas on TV. Kevin gets woken up by the van doors shutting, and he sees the guys go by the window, and they say they're going to go down toward the basement. So Kevin races down. He turns on the lights, and Marv says, "I thought you said they were gone." And he's like, "Oh, they're supposed to leave this morning." So they all take off and head back to the van, and then we cut to Kevin, who's now hiding under the bed of his parents' room. JD, what do you think about this scene here? This is really the first time we see Kevin kind of spring into action.
He springs into action, but what does he do? He hides under the bed. Right?
He's 8. What do you think he was going to do? Walk out and like punch him?
I don't. That's the way that I was raised.
Kick him in the nuts.
I mean, or not raised, because I didn't have... At least Kevin has like a family presence to like teach him stuff, but I don't know. I think it makes sense, his reaction to this situation.
Definitely. So we cut back to the airport, and Kate is kicking a lady off the payphone, and then she's telling family members to start calling everybody they know, try and get a hold of somebody from the street. And then we cut back to Kevin, who says he's not a wimp anymore. And he goes outside and he's like, "I'm not afraid anymore. You hear me? I'm not afraid." Then old man Marley comes over with his shovel. Kevin screams and runs back under the bedsheets. We cut next to Kate, who's calling the local police to go and check on Kevin. And just buffoonery here. I mean, they're totally clueless. They're transferring her back and forth. The one cop's literally eating a donut as he's on the phone. And then he cuts back, he sends her back to the lady that transferred the call the first time. He's like, "Got a hyper on too." And then Kate gets transferred over, and the lady is like, "Hey, listen, we'll send a policeman over to check on your son. Relax." So we cut to the cop knocking on the door, but Kevin's so scared to go down there. The cop radios back, "There's no one home. Tell him to count their kids again." Warren, what'd you think of this scene?
It was a very silly scene, and the whole back and forth, and even, you know, it was very early 90s, you know, even the cop sitting there talking like, "Oh, yeah, donut," as he's like, you know, talking to these people, and it's like they could not care less. Like, "Oh, my kid's missing. Hold on, let me put you on hold." It just seems like a very, like, odd exchange between them.
Now, we're at the airport next. They're trying to get a flight home. Peter and Kate are doing everything they can. Kate says the only way she's leaving here is on a flight. The airline lady says, "Well, you know, you can stay here. We'll put you on standby. If something's open up, we'll get you on the next flight out of here." So next, we have this. Pretty much, this is like the iconic scene of the film. This is usually what you'll see on during the holidays if there's a commercial for it. And it's Kevin brushing his hair, putting on some aftershave, and then yelling at the screen. When I was a kid, this cracked me up. I didn't laugh at this. I don't laugh at this anymore. I don't know. JD, is this just old age annoying me? I don't. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're getting old for sure. I think you need to check your sock drawer and you know, maybe refresh in a little.
I usually keep a pair of socks in my shorts.
No, I know. That's exactly what I'm getting at.
Oh, okay.
I think for me, most importantly, this is sort of what introduced me to what aftershave is.
Yeah.
At a very young age, and I had no idea. And again, for me, this is a big scene because I was never taught how to shave myself. And I feel like here, Kevin McAllister has no idea what he's doing. He's just sort of winging it. And he knows his dad's not happy when he slaps that aftershave on.
So we cut to Kevin trying to climb the shelf in Buzz's room. He's trying to get this tin box from the top shelf. He almost gets to the top when the shelf breaks and everything comes crashing down. And we have a little bit of foreshadowing here, which I always love, where Buzz's tarantula is now out of his tank and roaming free throughout the house. Kevin grabs Buzz's life savings and heads out of the house. We cut to The Murphy's house across the street, where we see Marv and Harry are parked outside and they're inside just robbing the house. The phone rings, and when the voice message starts to play, it's Peter saying, "Hey, we're still in France. Here's our number if you need to reach us." And Marv says, "Hey, that house last night, was that the McAllisters?" Harry's like, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, they're gone." And then Harry goes, "We're tuna tonight." JD, what do you think of this ending scene here?
I love the fact that they call the house Tuna, first of all. Big Tuna.
Big Tuna.
Big Tuna. And there's such a great amount of bait and switch that's going on between Kevin and Harry and Lloyd. It's like fishing, you know? It's like, give them a little bit of bait, pull it on back. And for the first time, like, Kevin is starting to lose control over the situation, which I think is a brilliant way of writing this scene, because it's not over the top, like, just having them break on into the house. It's doing it and breaking into another house and giving the information. Like, it's using exposition in a very, very good way.
Definitely. I also like that you said Harry and Lloyd. That's from Dumb and Dumber. I'm not going to edit that out. I'm not mad at it. Future episode, Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, shit.
Hey, it's close. It's easy to mix those two up. So we're at the store next, and Kevin is trying to purchase a toothbrush, and he wants to make sure it's approved by the American Dental Association. When his neighbor, old man Marley, enters the store and kind of slams his hand down on the counter, Kevin backs up and runs out, and then the lady's like, "Hey, you gotta pay for that, son." And then she yells, "Timmy, stop that boy!" And he starts chasing after him outside. Then he yells for the cop. He's like, "Shoplifter!" And then literally the fattest, most unathletic cop of all time tries to get Kevin, and he just kind of stumbles and falls down on the ice as Kevin slides all the way through on his knees. And then we have a quick shot here of a train going by, which a couple episodes we covered planes, trains, and automobiles. So far, Warren, the only vehicle we're missing here is the automobile. We've got planes, we've got trains. I love the way John Hughes kind of spins this web. What do you think?
It was a very clever way to kind of put it in there. And he kind of did that throughout the movie with different things, with even play with Kevin McAllister character and harkening back to Uncle Buck. And just a lot there was, if you caught it, if you recognize his style of writing, then you'll always catch the little, I guess Marvel is known for the Easter egg, but before, John Hughes used to throw a lot of Easter eggs in his movies where he would just kind of pop a joke in there that you wouldn't understand unless you had already seen the movie that he was referring to.
Yep, I love that. Harry's mad at Marv in the next scene because Marv has plugged up the sink, and he's like, "That's our calling card, man. We're the Wet Bandits." And as they're arguing, they almost run over Kevin, who's walking home. Harry slams on the brake and yells down his window, and he's like, "You gotta watch where you're going." And Marv's like, "Yeah, Santa Claus doesn't visit the funeral homes, little buddy." Harry says, "All right, well, Merry Christmas." He smiles at Kevin, and his little silver tooth sparkles at Kevin. And that puts like a shocked look on his face because it's the same tooth that shined at him earlier when Harry was dressed up as a cop and wished him Merry Christmas inside their house. Harry sees the look on Kevin's face and he's like, "That was weird. See the way that kid looked at me?" So they start following him. Kevin looks back and sees that they're following him, so he starts to run. And he gets to the church and hides in the manger under a blanket. Marv and Harry can't find him, and they both are like, "We're not going in the church." So Kevin leaves, and as he's running, he says, "When those guys come back, I'll be ready." JD, what do you think of this scene?
It's a little kind of silly. "When those guys come back, I'll be ready." Right? Like him hiding out in the nativity scene. But I don't know. Like, I think this appeals to so much of an 8-year-old's, like, what you would expect and what you would want out of a scene. Like, it's like Mighty Max in its supreme form. Do you guys remember Mighty Max?
I do remember Mighty Max.
I do.
Yes. Love you both right now. George, give us a little, give our audience a little, what is Mighty Max?
Mighty Max is a cartoon about a baby who would go into another galaxy, and he had a couple of toys, right, that would come to life. You're talking about, that's Mighty Max, right?
No, I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Kyle.
No, this is the one about his baseball cap like teleports him.
Yes. George, what the hell are you talking about?
I'm talking about Fantastic Max.
Oh,
a very cool '90s cartoon that a lot of people don't remember. Yeah. You guys don't remember it either, because I don't.
I only remember Mighty Max.
What are you talking about?
That's awesome. So Harry and Marv come back around that night. They find the house is filled with people. At least it looks that way from the outside. Kevin has rigged together all these like. I even know how they explain like all the stuff that he has. Are these blow up dolls? I mean, this seems inappropriate for an 8-year old to have that many of them, or anybody in that house for that matter. But the one thing I found really cool, because John Hughes is such a Chicago guy, is we've got the cardboard cutout of Jordan going by on the train, and 1989, nobody was bigger than Michael Jordan at that point, because they're about ready to go win their first NBA title later that next year. So. Warren, what do you think of this scene with Kevin's rigging techniques here?
I love the song because they played one of my favorite Christmas songs. If I remember right, that's when they played Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree.
Yes.
If I remember right? Yep. So I love that song. And it was really clever and great product placement to kind of put the cardboard of Michael Jordan, because at that time, every kid wanted to be Michael Jordan. And I think those were mannequins, I want to say, and I believe...
Okay, they're mannequins, not blow-up dolls.
Mentioned that the mom was maybe a fashion designer.
Oh,
that's
wow.
That's why she would have those mannequins. Because that's what it looked like, those things that fashion designers have that they put different clothes on. I think that's what that was, but they never really explained it. If it was sex dolls, that would be a much more interesting movie, I think.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Of course, my mind just goes right to blow up dolls. So we cut to France, where one of the cousins is asking Buzz if he's at all worried about Kevin. This might be my favorite Buzz line of the entire movie. He goes, "No, for three reasons. A, I'm not that lucky. 2, we have smoke detectors. And D, we live on one of the most boring streets in the United States of America, where nothing remotely dangerous will ever happen." JD, did you pick up on the way Buzz said that for three reasons, A, 2, and D? That made me laugh so hard. No reason.
Yeah, that was something that it's in my shtick. Like, I regularly do that anytime. I'm like, hey, there's three reasons. I say 1, 2, C, or I do A, B, 3, and it's all based from this because Buzz is fantastic.
Well, he even skipped C. It should have been A, 2, C, but he goes, A2D, and I was like, that is so clever.
Even better. Gosh.
So we literally smash to the pizza guy running over the statue in the front of the door. Now, this is from Planes and Trains, is it not? Or was this from Uncle Buck where the statue gets run over?
I believe that's Uncle Buck.
It's got to be Uncle Buck with John Candy, right?
Yeah.
Yes, there we go. I knew there was a cut in there. So a note tells him to use the back door. He goes and knocks on the door, and the video from earlier plays. He's like, "Who is it?" And then Kevin is controlling the remote, and he keeps going through this thing with him. He's like, "How much do I owe you?" The guy says $11.80, so Kevin slides out $12. He says, "Keep the change, you filthy animal." The delivery guy grabs the money and calls him a cheapskate, and then Kevin hits play again. "I'll tell you what, I'll give you to the count of 10 to get your ugly, yellow, no-good keister out my door. 1, 2, 10. And then the delivery guy falls over the garbage cans, and then flails all over the snow before he gets in his car and drives off. And Kevin grabs his pizza, says, "A lovely cheese pizza just for me." JD, how great is this scene? I love this part.
I think the bigger question is, Kyle, what do you order on your pizza when it's just you?
Always sausage and pepperoni.
Together?
Together. Always together. If I George. Only get one topping, it's sausage.
George, what do you order? You've got the house to yourself. What's your pizza order?
If I'm feeling real spicy, I'll go with the Italian beef chardonnay.
Jeez. It's a very white response.
Or fried chicken on a pizza?
Oh, whoa. You said that, not us.
Oh, God. Back at the airport, we have a couple Planes, Trains, and Automobiles references here. Guy on the plane from the last movie is now Guy in the Airport. And Kate is giving her $500, a pocket translator, earrings. And then Guy in the Airport says she's got her own earrings. She's got a whole shoebox of them, dangly one. Kate says, I'm begging you, from a mother to a mother, please. And the lady's like, oh, Ed. All right. So we see the plane take off, and I assume Kate's on it. Kevin is sitting in the bed looking at a family photo, and he says, if they come back, he promises he'll be better. The next day, Kevin is lip-singing in the air to I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas, and he does the old aftershave gimmick again. Then we cut to him at the grocery store, and he's adapting pretty quickly here on just being on his own. He's clipping coupons. We see him check out, and he's got a little back and forth with the lady that checks him out, and she's like, aren't you a little young? He's like, come on. My mom's out in the car. What do you think I am? Warren, what do you think about Kevin just, I mean, adapting pretty quick on his own? I mean, he's a pretty sharp kid.
Yeah, it definitely shows how smart he is. And it, for me, for some reason, it just comes off as a little annoying, too. Because it's like, when you're trying to do retail and you're trying to do your job, it's like, all right, get the fuck out of here. Like, come on, come on. Like, you're not trying to have an interaction with a little kid, especially like a smug little kid.
Right.
Like, she's in a car, duh. Like, all right, why don't you get...
Yeah, if you've ever worked retail, you probably hate this scene. I can definitely see that. So on the way home, the bags rip and his groceries fall out. And then we cut to Kevin downstairs doing the laundry. And the furnace turns on. And it's doing its thing again at him. And Kevin just turns. He's like, shut up. And it goes away. JD, Kevin's coming into his own here pretty quick. What'd you think of this scene?
Oh, he's definitely growing up. He's gone through a lot of the slings and arrows of maturity. And I love that they use this furnace. And I'm going to go ahead and hearken us back to the episode of The Burbs with that devil furnace in yes. our archives. The furnace is an evil, evil, evil entity, especially when you're a young child in a basement. And for him to be able to look at it and say, screw you, pal, shows a lot of his character growth.
Marv and Harry arrive at the house, and Harry says, I don't get it. Looks like no one's home again, but last night, place was jumping. So he sends Marv to try and go take a look, and he goes around to the back door. And again, Kevin sees it, so he does the whole angels and filthy souls routine again, turns on the VCR, hits play, and we hear Marv coming back into the van after he's been scared off like the pizza guy, and he's like, there's a guy in there, his name was Snakes, and he blew the other guy away, and Harry's just like, Snakes? I don't know no snakes. Weird. So they just plan to come back later that night. We cut to the airport. Kate's trying to get a connecting flight, but the customer service person just says, I can't help you. We don't have anything available. She's starting to get really angry when we get our John Candy cameo as Gus Polinski, Polka King of the Midwest. Let's listen to our first scene and only one of two scenes here with John Candy.
I can do for
do
you
it.
Today.
Do anything.
I can get you a hotel room.
What?
Excuse me. Can you excuse us for a second? Can I see you for a second, please? Excuse us. Oh. No, but Aaron, you got a little bit of a dilemma there. We got a crisis ourselves. Allow me to introduce myself. Gus Polinski. How are you? Polka King of the Midwest. The Kenosha Kickers.
Hi there.
Hiya. No? That's okay. I thought you might have recognized. Anyways, I had a few hits a few years ago. That's why, you know, polka, 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 polka. No? In Twin Lakes Polka, Tamavuji Polka, a.k.a. Kiss Me Polka, Polka Twist.
Oh, these are songs.
Yeah. Yeah, we some fairly big hits for us, you know, in the early 70s, you know. Yeah, we sold about 623 copies of that.
In Chicago?
No, Sheboygan. Very big in Sheboygan. They loved it, you know.
I'm sorry, did you say you could help me?
Anyway, I'm Ben Ramblin. Our flight was canceled, so we gotta drive. So, see the guy in the yellow jacket over there? By the budget sign, he's gonna rent us a nice big van, and we're gonna drive to Milwaukee. Now, I heard you had some problems. You're getting to Chicago to see your kid or something?
My son, we left me. He's there.
Oh, jeez. If you have to get to Chicago, we'll gladly drive you. It's on the way to Milwaukee.
You'd give me a ride?
Sure we will. Why not? You know, you gotta get home and see your kid.
A ride to Chicago?
Sure, you know, it's Christmas time.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
You don't mind going with some polka buns?
No, I'd love to.
So, Warren, what'd you think of this scene here and our first shot of John Candy?
Okay, I'm going to definitely say this because I am a big John Candy fan.
Good.
I was such a fan of kids, and I used to watch the Camp Candy cartoon that a lot of people don't remember.
I've actually never seen those, and I'm a huge John Candy fan.
It was funny for 1990, whatever it was. But yeah, you know, these scenes that are between John Candy and Catherine O'Hara, is that her name?
Yes.
If I remember. Because I know they both have a background in improv, and I feel like their scenes together feel very improv. In both of the scenes that they do, they seem to be somehow improv, but fit very into the whole show. Because I really like the idea of him being the Polka King, and even his name and the accent that he speaks with, it's just, it's very subtly funny.
That's interesting that you mentioned that, because that was one of my interesting facts I was going to bring up in a few minutes, but I'll drop it here. John Candy's lines, every single line in this movie, are 100% improv. He made them all up on the spot. They had no script for him. So you picked that up right away. That's awesome. Now, Kevin goes outside, cuts down his own Christmas tree, and Harry says, "Looks like we're getting scammed by a kindergarten." Harry says, "That kid we saw the other day, he lives here, and he's home alone." Harry and Marv go back to the van, and Harry says, "We'll come back around 9 p.m. tonight after grabbing a bite to eat." And Kevin hears this, and Marv says, "Yeah, kids are scared of the dark." And Harry's like, "You're scared of the dark, Marv." And they start to argue and bicker. And then we cut to Kevin, who's going to see Santa Claus next. One interesting fact here, Chris Farley auditioned for this little role here as Santa Claus and did not get the part. So it went to whoever this other guy is. I know I recognized him from, I think he was in Down Periscope. He's been in some different things, but Santa Claus is leaving and he's got a ticket on his window. And the guy's like, "How low can you get giving Santa a ticket on Christmas? What's next? Rabies from the Easter Bunny?" Kevin comes up from behind and he says, "Yeah, I know you're not the real Santa, but I also know that you work for him. And what I'd like you to do is to tell Santa to bring home my whole family." He names everybody off, and then at the end he goes, "And if he's got time, my Uncle Frank." And then the mall Santa says, "Okay, come here, kid. You gotta get a little treat for coming to see Santa." He gives him a couple Tic Tacs and tells him not to spoil his dinner. JD, things are about to pick up here as far as the action goes, but what'd you think of this scene?
I always feel so bad because he empties out like the remainder of his Tic Tacs.
Yes.
Santa has no more Tic Tacs.
And he's going to a party, if you remember.
And he's smoking that cigarette, and he's going to go to that party with cigarette breath.
Shit breath. Yep.
Shit breath.
There you go.
I feel it's a mistake that he gave away all of his Tic Tacs.
You know, when I was watching it, I could have swore that was Artie Lang. And then I'm like, no, I know him somewhere else. And yeah, he was the chef or something in Down Paris.
Yes, the chef. And he was, there you go.
He was in, I think he was in Groundhog Day, I want to say. Like a really small part in Groundhog Day.
I think he was, you're right.
In Armageddon, maybe?
Oh, yes, yeah, he's on the drill team. You're 100% right, yeah. Next, we arrive at the church, where we get to meet the neighbor for the first time, Old Man Marley. He's played by Robert Blossom. I'm sure our listeners will recognize him, because I know we have a lot of people that love horror movies. He's George LeBay from Christine. one of my favorite Stephen King movies. He was also in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. JD, Warren, do either of you recognize him here from any of those movies?
Well, I recognize him from Escape from Alcatraz.
Oh, there you go. Yep. I actually not real familiar with that movie. I saw that on his IMDb. But yeah, I recognize him as the old man that sells the kid the car in Christine. Interesting fact, since we covered Scrooge last week, Old Man Marley is a nod to Jacob Marley, Scrooge's dead partner in the Charles Dickens novel A Christmas Carol. He tells Kevin that he's here watching his granddaughter and tells Kevin this is the place to be if you're kind of feeling bad about yourself. Kevin says, you know, he hasn't been so good this year. And Marley says, you know, deep down, you know, you love your family, but they can hurt you and you can hurt them. And he says the real reason he came is to see his granddaughter because he's not welcome at his family's house anymore. And he explains that he had a temper one night and he told his son that he didn't care to see him anymore. And his son said the same thing. And then Kevin's like, why don't you just call him? Marley says he's afraid, he doesn't want to talk to me. And Kevin tells him he needs to call him, give it a shot, if nothing else, for your granddaughter's sake. I'm sure she misses you and misses the presence. And then Marley tells him he better run along here, get back to where he belongs. They say Merry Christmas to each other, and Kevin goes home as we hear the bells ringing. And I assume, I don't know if that's the 7 o'clock bell or the 8 o'clock bell, but JD, what do you think of this scene?
It's a good point of story development because we have the South Bend Shovel Slayer. That's what we're calling him, right?
Right. That's what Buzz calls him.
Well, but and obviously Buzz is top notch. It does a good job of creating a foil between who you think the main character is and who you think the villain of the story is. And then you realize Kevin is still the main character, but Old Man Marley is not the villain that you thought he was.
Yes.
So it's like a bait and switch to like pull the rug out from you to be like, Kevin doesn't have to worry about getting smashed in the forehead with a shovel. Spoiler alert for later. Or, you know, at least set up for later.
Right.
But he has much bigger fish to fry.
We're getting to the good stuff here. These are going to start to fly by. So we have a montage of Kevin setting up some of the booby traps. Yeah, I said booby traps. Data, Goonies, future episode. He says, this is my house and I have to defend it. Kevin makes himself a dinner in the microwave. We talked about that earlier, mac and cheese. And as we see Harry and Marv arrive outside, Marv says, how do you want to do this? Harry's like, you go through the back door. I don't know. Maybe he'll just let us in. And Marv's like, yeah, kids are stupid. The 9 p.m. bell rings. Kevin grabs his BB gun. He's like, shh. This is it. Don't get scared now. Harry knocks on the door and says, we know that you're in there. And you're all alone. Kevin goes through the doggy door here, puts his BB gun right into his crotch, pulls the trigger, and Harry falls to the ground. He's like, fritch it, fritch it, fritch it. Get him, Marv! Marv goes over there and puts his head through the doggy door where Kevin's waiting. He's like, hello. Just fires right in his forehead. Marv falls and says, that little creep is armed. Harry goes around front and slips on the ice that Kevin set up earlier. Marv goes around the back and slips down the stairs and falls down each one. And then Harry tries one more time, falls again. And Marv uses the crowbar to finally get himself to his feet. And then he's trying to pry the door open. He's messing with it. Eventually, he just turns the handle and it's unlocked. So he just opens up the door, walks in. And when he pulls the cord to turn on the light, an iron comes down and smashes him right in the face, leaving a bright red iron mark right on his forehead. We cut back to Harry, who gets back to his feet, finally, like, ice skates his way to the front door, grabs the handle, and starts screaming as the army crawls back to the snow and puts his hand in there. We can hear it kind of sizzle like it's bacon on a stovetop pan. And we'll cut here for a second. JD, thoughts on the guys kind of getting destroyed here pretty early on?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you a very true story if you want to dig it.
Do it.
So after watching this movie when we were kids, my older brother decided to take a grill starter, like a charcoal lighter that they put on the doorknob.
Oh boy.
And he put it on the doorknob of our front door.
Yeah.
And he said, I want to see if this works. Dead serious.
Yeah.
He goes outside. I shut the door. He grabs the doorknob. Guess what? It doesn't work.
Okay.
He comes back in. He goes, it doesn't work. Something's not right. He grabs the other doorknob. Needless to say, that shit is legit. He burned his mother effing hand like no tomorrow. And I just laughed at him. I had to have been 6 years old. And I'm just laughing at my older brother like, you're so dumb.
We have Marv climbing the stairs next. We see his shoes are stuck to the first two. And his feet are covered in like this black glue. He finally gets a little bit closer to the top and he steps directly on a nail and he just grabs his foot, screams, and falls straight back on his back right from the stairs. We cut back to Harry, who's at the back door. He opens it up and you hear the flamethrower turn on. It's like, and his whole head just engulfs in flames and he goes running out. He's like, ah! He puts his head down in the snow. When he pulls it out, his hat's completely burned off on the top, and he's got no more hair. This time, he gets back up and runs right through the door, breaking the flamethrower, and then he goes into another room, and this time he walks into some saran wrap with glue on it. When he pulls it off, the fan turns on and blows feathers all over his face. Finally, Marv and Harry get into the house at the same time. They see each other for the first time since they've been in. Harry's like, why the hell did you take your shoes off? I was like, why the hell are you dressed like a chicken? JD, what do you think about this scene?
I love that this is their like first coming back together. And he notices like, why did you take your shoes off? And why do you look like a chicken?
Yes.
That just gets me every single time. Why do you look like a chicken?
The hell you look like a chicken?
and it puts Joe Pesci in such a just a box to be like, you're short, you're stout, you're missing the top of your hat, and you're covered in feathers.
It's hilarious. Where Kevin's about to entice them to go up to the upstairs. Let's listen to a short clip here.
I'm up here, you morons! Come and get me! You guys give up, or you're thirsty for more?
Heads up!
Don't worry, Marv, I'll get him for you.
Warren, what do you think about the paint can scene?
Oh, the paint can scene. It was very fun. I think it just shows the interactions that they have with Macaulay Culkin. It shows how good of actors they are, because the scene itself is pretty stupid, and it has a chance of just being so stupid that it makes you want to turn off your TV. But their interactions and just the way it kind of like, it's very physical comedy done right.
Yeah.
And when physical comedy's done wrong, it's just like, all right, turn this off.
Yeah, that's a great
point. I'm going to interrupt you. That's okay. A great point. Yeah, Jinx, no, by Mia Coke.
That it, to that point, that's the issue with the third and fourth movies, is they try to do that type of comedy, but those actors are not on this level, and it comes off so amateur and so unfunny that those movies are unwatchable. And I think that's why these guys are so good at what they do.
I'm sorry, are you critiquing French Stewart right now?
I am critiquing French
Stewart. Really? Really?
Consider it done.
The only thing I remember about Home Alone 3 is that Scarlett Johansson, and she was like his older sister, I want to say.
Yes.
And I think the mom is still the same mom, I think, in part 3.
Nope, different redhead.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Yep, yeah, but Scarlett Joe is in there. Upstairs, they chase down Kevin. Harry misses, but Marv doesn't. He jumps and grabs him by the foot, and he's like, I got him! I got him, Harry! Kevin's trying to get free, and he sees the tarantula, and he grabs it, puts it on Marv's face. I'm not even going to attempt to scream like this, but Marv screams like an absolute woman. And that might be my favorite scene of the entire movie, just watching him scream from the tarantula. Kevin gets away, shoots upstairs, gets to a zip line, and then we cut back to Marv, who now sees the tarantula is on Harry. He's like, don't move. He's like, Marv? And then Marv swings down, hits him right with his crowbar, and of course misses the tarantula and just hits him right in the gut. We cut back to Kevin, who jumps from the house and ziplines right into his treehouse, crashes safely inside, and then Harry and Marv get up there, and Harry's like, this is a trap. You know, he wants us to not climb this zipline and go to the treehouse. He expects that we're gonna go back down. So they start to kind of shimmy their way across the zipline, and Kevin grabs a big pair of cutters and just chops it, and they go crashing into the side of the house, into the brick. And then Kevin gets down and runs past them. Of course, they can't catch him because they're all banged up. Marv has no shoes. He's got glass on his feet. And Kevin yells over, I'm over here, you big horse's ass. Or Harry says, wait, he wants us to follow him so he can make us go through his little fun trap. I got a better idea. So they cut him off inside of the house when Kevin comes up through the basement. And we'll get back to the scene in a minute. But Warren, what do you think about the chase scenes here and Kevin ziplining from the house?
Okay, most of the booby trap scenes didn't really hold up well. One of the best booby trap scenes still is the one with the spider. I watched this the other day, and I laughed my ass off. The way he screamed is so funny. But there's parts of this movie that, as an adult, you just kind of got to shut your brain off and just kind of watch it. Because when he ziplines over, as a kid, you're like, oh, man, I would love to zipline over. That would be so cool to have my own zipline. But if you think about it as an adult, okay, the kid ziplines over, and they're in the home by themselves. So if their mission was to steal everything in the home, this would be the perfect opportunity
mission accomplished. To steal everything. Lock the doors. And leave. That's a good point. Wow, I've never thought about it like that. Amazing. Okay, we cut inside this neighbor's house, and Marv and Harry have grabbed Kevin, and they've hung him up by the back of his shirt from a door hanger, and they tell him they're going to do exactly the same thing to him that he did to them. Then they both go back and forth, like burn his head with a blowtorch, smash his face with an iron, slap him right in the face with a paint can, shove a nail through his foot, and Harry says, but first, I'm going to bite off every one of these fingers, one at a time. Old man Marley sneaks up behind. He hits Marv over the head with a shovel, knocks him out. Harry turns around. He gets smashed right in the face, too. And he grabs Kevin and says, now let's get you back home. JD, thoughts about Marley coming to the rescue?
Old man Marley, I love that they set him up in such a way to make him appear to be villainous and then make him appear to be, you don't know if he's good or bad, and now he's the good guy swooping in. Like, he goes through all the swoops of good and bad, right? And so now we have him as the hero, where we used to think him as the villain, and he has such a character arc that I think it's underwhelming and underappreciated about what he brings to this film and what the screenwriters and producers did to bring him to life.
Ask you this, do you think Harry would have really bit the finger off?
Oh yeah. I never want to see that scene.
Okay, well, one of the interesting facts is during rehearsal, Joe Pesci accidentally did bite him in the finger, to the point where to this day Macaulay Culkin still has a scar on his finger from Joe Pesci biting him in the scene during rehearsals. So yeah, apparently he was method before it was cool. Now, we see Kevin watching from the window as Marv and Harry are being arrested. The cop says, nice move, leaving the water running. Now we know each and every house you've hit. Harry and Marv just kind of stare at each other. You can tell Harry's like, I told you, you idiot. As they're getting put into the cop car, Marv says, "Now that's the Wet Bandits. B-A-N." And then Harry's like, "Shut up!" As the cop car pulls out of the driveway, Harry looks over and sees Kevin, who smiles and waves at him from the window. Warren, how funny is this watching Marv just try and first off spell out the name, and then Kevin's just like, "See ya, don't drop the soap."
This is one of my favorite parts because I love the idea of the Wet Bandit. And I actually do have a funny story about the Wet Bandit and the name in general. So I was on a date with a girl who was really young, you know, and she had never seen the movie somehow. So we went to go to play like trivia at a bar. Like, "Oh, what should our name be?" And I was like, "Oh, we should do the Wet Bandit." And she just looked at me like, "What the hell are you talking about?" So I went with it, and I'm like, "Oh, she doesn't know the movie." So now I'm just quoting the movie this whole day. I'm getting more drunk, more belligerent, like making all these references, like, "Look at that woman over there. Woof." And yeah, the girl's like, "What the hell is wrong with this guy?" Moral of the story, didn't get a second date on that one.
That's awesome. Like, that should have been an episode of Blind Date on MTV back in the day. That would have played well. Now, in the back of this truck that they've rented, Kate is talking with Gus, and he's comforting her by assuring her she's not a bad parent. He's like, "You know, look at this guy. He hasn't seen his kid in 12 months. And he's like, "I'm no father of the year. You know, one time we took a young one to a funeral parlor, and we left him there all day. And, you know, we went back at night to get him after we kind of came to our senses." And Gus says, "You know, he's okay, you know. I mean, after 6-7 weeks, you know, he finally came around and started talking again. And, you know, kids are resilient." And Kate cuts in. She's like, "Can we stop talking about this?" And Gus is like, "Well, I mean, you brought it up. I was just trying to make you feel better." So the next morning, Kevin awakes and sees the snow coming down outside. He rushes downstairs yelling for his mom, only to find an empty house. He opens the door, looks outside, doesn't see anything. But when he shuts the door, we hear the car pull up. We don't see her get out, but Kevin's upstairs looking at a photo in the bedroom again when the door opens up. So they embrace here. JD, what'd you think about this scene?
I think it's a good culmination of everything that the characters have gone through, like the travel, the epic journey, the shoebox of earrings. And it's kind of funny to see, like, she gets home, what, sniff before the rest of the family?
Like, yeah, literally, when she left, they must have pulled up.
Like, if you had only been patient enough to wait for the next flight, she went through all of that money and all of the shoebox of earrings, the translator, like, and dude from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah.
But it's worth it to see that moment between Kevin and mom where they just embrace, right? Like,
definitely.
I think that's the heart of the movie.
Yep. And, you know, one thing that I noticed right away, again, these are John Hughes Easter eggs, but this is the exact same ending to Uncle Buck with Tia and the mom, where the mom shows up and she's been trying to get home. And then Tia's just standing there, like, staring at her. And then she kind of plays it off. And then they hug. And Kevin does the exact same thing in this scene. And then, of course, he's like, "Well, where's everyone else at?" And the mom's like, "Oh, you know, they couldn't make it. They wanted to." And then the door opens up. The whole family comes in. Buzz is like, "Kevin, pretty cool you didn't burn the whole place down." Good point by Warren early on. It's still kind of a slap to him. Like, surprised you didn't burn the entire house down. Kate's like, "How'd you guys get home?" Peter's like, "You know, we took the morning flight, you know, the one you didn't want to wait for." She laughs. She's like, "Oh, I wasted my whole last 3 days traveling." Kate says, "Well, we need to go shopping and we don't even have milk." I was like, "Yes, we do. I went shopping." Buzz is like, "What?" He said, "I got milk, eggs, and fabric softener." Peter's like, "What a funny guy. What else did you do while we were gone?" Kevin's like, "Oh, yeah, I just hung around." Everyone leaves, and Kevin goes over to the window to look outside. Peter goes into the other room and find Harry's silver tooth. And he's like, "Kate, what is this?" Kevin sees Marley next door reuniting with his kids. He smiles and they wave back and forth at each other. And we think we're about to get this really awesome happy ending when Buzz yells, "Kevin, what'd you do to my room?" Kevin takes off running and the credits roll. Warren, what'd you think about the ending of the film?
I love the ending all the way up to Buzz's yelling at his brother. I love that whole ending scene with the mom and Kevin embracing. It was beautiful because of the music for me, because the music had a Christmas feel to it without being a Christmas song, because there were no words. You just had the beautiful music playing in the background. And like the whole family like popping up at the end, like right after she came in, it's very like 80s sitcom. Like, oh.
Scooby-Doo.
But I love the ending. I love the ending when, but what did you do to my room? I thought that was pretty hilarious.
JD, the movie's coming on 30 years old. It's 29 years old right now. How would you say Home Alone is held up overall?
Dude, this movie holds up beyond belief. It's worth its weight in gold. It holds its water. For our young audience, if you've never seen this movie, give it a chance. If our older audience, if this is what, Kyle, how many times have you seen this movie?
Oh, gosh, over 100.
It has, right?
Yeah.
George, how many times have you seen this movie?
I have not seen it that many times, actually. I'm more of a fan of the sequel.
Oh, that is a great and interesting point. So what I will say is, yes, this movie holds its water. The sequel is fantastic. So if this is your first time watching Home Alone, congratulations, and the sequel will blow your mind.
Next, we'll be back with a new episode next week. Not sure what we're going to do yet. We're still kind of deciding. I don't think we're going to do movie. We're going to be probably going to be more like a Shooting the Breeze episode or some type of like top five breakdown. I don't know. JD, we still haven't really put together plans here.
Waiting for the Christmas miracle. The magic of Santa will tell us what this next episode will be. Let's put it up to the audience. Like, tweet at us, Insta us, Facebook, hate us. What do you guys want us to talk about? Christmas, just in general, a specific movie? Maybe we finally review Die Hard. I don't know. Could be anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Shoot us some feedback there. Warren, thanks again for jumping on the episode, man. We appreciate you coming on and enjoying this 89 classic movie with us.
Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. No problem. And I definitely would like to throw out a possible movie for you guys to do. Okay. And we were talking a lot about Daniel Stern, and it made me think of two movies that you guys have not done that don't get a lot of love. One is City Slickers. I think it was a great movie. I don't think you guys have done that. And I don't think you guys have done any Martin Short movies. So I would personally like to see The Three Amigos.
Okay. There we go. There's two great movies to add to the list. I thought for sure you were going to say Celtic Pride. That's going to be on. That's on our list. We just haven't put it on the schedule yet. I do like Martin Short. I haven't seen Three Amigos in forever. I love me some Captain Ron, though. That's a great Martin Short movie that I like. So yeah, we'll definitely have to check those out. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, YouTube. Everything's free. Just remember to hit that subscribe button. We're on social media at Back in Time Pod. You can email us backintimepodcast@gmail.com. And it's that time of the episode to climb back into the DeLorean, punch in today's date, and return back to present day. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. See ya.
So is there a difference between Joe Pesci and Danny DeVito? Just asking for a friend.